really, Joshua is one of those great Sunday school adventure stories, isn't it? I'm sure we all remember hearing about the crossing the Red Sea, the wandering through the wilderness, entering the land. It is one of those great Sunday school type stories. And of course, we want to sit here today and try and find a little bit more than just a Sunday school story. And like I said, we want to find more than just an historical event. What we want to look for is truth about God and how these stories reveal more and more about Him. And every one of these events that's recorded in scriptures has a human element. There are always people involved in these things. People from great leaders, people in positions of authority, military leaders, those in business, people who were involved in commerce and trade, teachers, prophets, workers, mums, dads, children. All of these stories have these people. And at the time of Joshua, pretty much all of these sort of people were involved in the story today, because we're talking about the whole nation here as we look at Joshua chapters 3 and 4. After 40 years of wandering around in the desert, camping, living as a nomadic nation, all of these people are on the verge of crossing over into this land that God has promised them. He promised their ancestors they would possess a land. Imagine the breadth of emotions that are going through the various people who are standing on the edge of this river. Perhaps there's relief that this wandering in the desert is going to somehow come to an end. Perhaps there is great joy and excitement about it. Perhaps there's fear. Perhaps there are still rumours going around about giants living on the other side and great fortified cities that will have to be overcome. How are we going to do all of that? Everything in between from these people who are standing on the edge of this river. But while the people are always involved in these events, they're never the centre, are they? They're never the centre of what this is all about. Every story, every incident, every account in the scriptures, we hope, surely, is leading us to a greater understanding of God, His character, His purposes. And so when we read these great accounts of nations or cities or families or even individuals, we're always looking for something beyond just the human element and that human encounter. We're seeking truth that reveals God's character and nature to us. We need to look for these things as we do read through Joshua 3 and 4 this morning. We're not going to read through the whole two chapters. There'll just be sections that I've picked out. But we're going to start with Joshua chapter 3 and read the first five verses. Early in the morning, Joshua and all the Israelites set out from Shittim and went to the Jordan, where they camped before crossing over. This is going to come up a lot. This is the way they just wrote things. You're going to read that they were camped here and they went to the river. And it seems like they just keep going to the river. But it's the same story, just mentioned several times. So they camped before the river before crossing over. After 3 days, the officers went throughout the camp giving orders to the people. When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priests who are Levites carrying it, you are to move out from your positions and follow it. Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before. But keep a distance of about 1,000 yards between you and the Ark. Do not go near it. Joshua told the people, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you." Having received an encouraging report from the spies who were sent out to Jericho, Joshua prepares the people of Israel to carry out the command of God that we read in chapter 1 verse 2 last week. God said, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give you to the Israelites." Remember, we mentioned, who is giving them this land? It's God. This is God fulfilling His purpose, His promise. It seems there was a good organization of the people as officers went throughout the tribes to make all of this happen. But from the very, but it is from the movement of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord that the people are to get their cue to move out for this last campsite to cross over into Jordan. And it is the covenant, it's the Ark of the Covenant that takes such a prominent role in these chapters today. The Ark dominates this story because the Ark is the symbol, it's the emblem of God dwelling amongst the people of Israel. In the Ark are the law that God gave Moses at Sinai, his very words. It's a very sacred thing for them. To keep it that way, there are priests, there are rituals, there are all these things, but it is this great symbol of God's presence with them. This is the symbol of the covenant relationship between God and his people, and they're very, very familiar with this. They know what it is. It's hugely significant that the Ark leads the people as they enter the land, because as the people follow its movements, it is God who is going ahead of them to lead them into Canaan. And Israel needs to follow it, because it says in verse 4, "Then you will know which way to go, since you have never been this way before." The crossing of the Jordan into Canaan was going to be a new experience for almost every single one of those people. Only Joshua and Caleb and the two spies who went to Jericho had even been into the land before. No one else had ever been there. In fact, only Joshua and Caleb, they were the only survivors from crossing the Red Sea. They are the only two left from that experience. So as a nation stands on the banks of the river, they have to put their trust in God to lead them. As a nation, they have to put their trust in God to fulfill his promise and take them into this land. And we read through these verses and these things happen. But each individual, I guess, had to make that decision. Am I going to go? Am I going to follow? Am I going to get up when the ark goes? Will I follow on? They did. And that was a great thing. But I guess it's like us. We have to make that decision. Are we going to follow God? Even when we don't know where we're going, even when it's new to us, even when it looks like it'll be extremely difficult, we have to make that decision. It's not always easy to do this. Despite what we know about God and his faithfulness, we come to places in our lives, don't we, where we've never been before. And once again, we have to put our trust in God's words. Sometimes we don't have much time to consider these things. Sometimes we have too much time and we overthink them, and we don't always do well in making those decisions. We gather our thoughts, we draw on our own experiences, and we try and make decisions based on those things. How hard is it sometimes to stop and say to ourselves, what do I know about God? How old am I? I'll be 50 in a few weeks' time. I've got to stop and say to myself, all this teaching I've had about God, all these things I know about him, all this experience I have in understanding his word, how is that helping me make decisions every day of my life rather than relying on my own judgment and what I think might be a good thing to do? It's very difficult sometimes to do that, but take that time. It's really worth it. There's no doubt, as Tony said last week, that this is one of those really high points in that covenant relationship, in that relationship between God and his people. They have respect for his chosen leader in Joshua. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but they don't always have that respect for God's chosen leaders. It's not always the case, but they have that real high point in their life, right, in their experience as a nation now. And they do put their trust in God's command as he leads them across the Jordan River. But they were to follow at a respectful distance. They were not to get too close to the ark. And while some commentators have suggested this was more to do with making the ark visible, like we're talking quite a number of people here, possibly up to 2 million people, and the idea would be that they should all be able to see this ark. It's not huge. So keep your distance so everyone can see it. I tend to think it's more about the respect that is due to this symbol of God's presence with them. So Joshua told the people to consecrate themselves in preparation for the amazing things, the miraculous acts of God that they will see happen. Things that will astound them and stay in their memories for the rest of their life. I love hearing stories, you know, listening to people who are involved in, you know, those great moments in history. I used to love leading up to Anzac Day when there were still some of the original Anzacs left, and they used to speak to them, and you know, could hear what these guys had to say 80, 85 years on from when it happened. I loved hearing those stories. People who are involved in you know, great moments in history, getting their actual account of what happened. These people, they're going to be part of one of those great historical moments. It's a great historical moment, but beyond that, they're going to witness amazing things by God. How much would you want to pass on what you saw on that day to your children, to your grandchildren? You know, how much would you want to pass that on, to see God fulfilling his promises and to be able to pass that on? And so Joshua says, consecrate yourself. Get yourself ready. Prepare yourself to see a holy God acting in a powerful, holy way. And so, you know, the cleansing, we don't really understand all of that because it's not really a part of our culture these days. But just imagine they've got to go and ritually clean themselves. Why are they doing that? While they're doing that, they're thinking about what God is going to do, which leads them up to the actual crossing of the river. And we're going to read a couple of passages, the next couple of verses in chapter 3, and then go down to verses 14 to 17. They're at the river. This is what Joshua tells them. Joshua said to the priests, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass ahead of the people." So they took it up and went ahead of them. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so that they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses. Tell the priests to carry the Ark of the Covenant. When you reach the edge of the Jordan's water, go and stand in the river." Just down to the next verses. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is at flood stage all during harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the Ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan. While the water flowing down to the Sea of Arabah, the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea, was completely cut off, so the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priest who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan while all Israel passed by, until the whole nation had completed crossing on dry ground. Since Moses' death, there had been no doubt who would succeed him, no doubt at all. Last week, Tony described what God said to Joshua as he took on this mantle of leadership. And here again, God affirms to Joshua that he'll make it clear to the people that Joshua is his chosen leader for them. There have been many others, perhaps. There were many others, perhaps, who had aspirations to leadership of the people. Israel was a very loose conglomeration of these 12 tribes. I'm sure each of those tribes had their own leaders. Perhaps there was one of them, or more than one, who thought, "I could do this." But God makes it so clear that he is going to exalt Joshua in the eyes of Israel, and they will know that he is the one that God has chosen. "Today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so that they may know that I am with you as I was with Moses." They'll know Joshua has God's favour, just as Moses did. It'll be obvious to them. And it's interesting how that is the indicator of leadership. Joshua was a great leader. He was a good military leader and organizer, obviously. But you know, the indicator to the people of Israel was not in his own strength. It wasn't even in his military strength. They would know that God was with him as he was with Moses. That's their indication of good leadership. And that's what they do. They cross the river, the dry bed. Hang on, I think I may have skipped a page. Yep, sorry, I did. I'm sorry. So when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, I'm lost. Hang on, it might happen. They crossed the river on the dry riverbed. They may have been camped near that area for quite some time. They may have been camped there for a while. They certainly would have known that the river was in flood. They certainly would have known that. And maybe they were thinking, how are we going to get across this river? How is this going to happen? As soon as the feet of the priest carrying the ark touch the water, they see the amazing, powerful act of God, the miraculous action of him. Meanwhile, upstream in a little town called Adam, the people are waking up to find so much water. What is going on? They're not a part of this story. They've just woken up. All this water is piled up. What's holding it back? Why is... Poor old Adam. I wonder if it's a part of their history, if they carried on for the next 40, 50, 100 years telling everybody, do you remember that day we woke up? Unbelievable. The priests stand firm on dry ground, holding the ark up as the people cross. Now, we don't have a detail of how this happened. I imagine the ark is in the middle of the river. It's quite a broad area where the people can cross on either side. They've got to keep 1,000 yards distance between them and the ark, and all these people are crossing over the river. Now, David mentioned the Jordan is not a huge river. It's not always very wide, but it is in flood. So they're all crossing over during this day. People in their family groups, people carrying every possession they have, everything that they've got, they're taking it with them as they cross under the direction of God, who is at the heart of everything that's happening that day. I can only imagine what they are all thinking, offering praise to God, thanking him for this wonderful day, to be a part of it. I can only imagine that that is what is going on. They had the ark, they had Joshua's commands given them directly by God, and later generations would be encouraged to reflect and remember this day, and to help them do that, God instructs them to put something in place to prompt their memory, to remember, to remind them of what happened on this day. And chapter 4 is really all about that. They've crossed over and then God instructs them to build a memorial to what happened on this day. We're going to read from verse 1 of chapter 4 down to verse 7. When the whole nation had finished crossing, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, right where the priest stood, and to carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you stay tonight." So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, "Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of tribes of the Israelites to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people forever." Chapter 4 of Joshua, God, who has given promises and a covenant relationship to his people, he sustained them through 40 years of travelling through the wilderness. He shows again how much He knows the human heart, how much he knows the human condition. He shows how fickle we are. He creates for us memorials, reminders that help keep our focus on the things that are more important, the things that are more important. Gives us a grounding, gives us stability, gives us a sense of purpose and soundness when we think about these memorials that God creates for us. This chapter really reveals the importance of remembering these things. God instructs Joshua to make this memorial. 12 men from the 12 tribes pick up 12 stones from the very spot where the priests stood with the Ark of the Covenant. They carry them on their shoulders. You can only imagine, these are big guys. It's not just across the other side of the river. It's quite some distance to Gilgal, where they will camp that night. The memorial will serve as a reminder of what happened, for sure. That is part of its purpose. But more than that, it will remind them that God fulfilled his promise to them that he gave to Abraham and had continued to give them through their ancestors. We'll see that beyond just giving a small nation a land for their home, God is fulfilling a bigger promise, a blessing to all the earth through his people, his wonderful plan of salvation for all humankind. So it was right that a memorial be created to remember this incident. And there is a place for memorials, even today, even for us. We must keep these things before us that remind us not just of what God has done, but they remind us what God is like. We need to be reminded of these things because we so easily forget them. God gave Noah a rainbow. He gave Abraham and Israel the sign of circumcision and the covenant, the tabernacle, later the temple. And from the New Testament we have baptism, a symbol of Jesus' death, burial and resurrection, and our acknowledgement of that and our participation as his people in that. Of course, we have the meal that we share every week. All these things God has given us to remember, not just him, not just what he does, but who he is to us. He is our relational God. He is the God who has given us these things. He created this. He said to Joshua, build it, but it was his idea. It was important to him that this happened. We have such a bad record with these things, though, don't we? Humankind, we have such a bad record with building these sort of memorials. We so quickly turn the memorial into the idol, into a god, into the thing that's important. And, many of us have been to some of these most fantastic churches, cathedrals that they've built in Europe and places like that. But it's like they have become their own god in themselves. The cost of maintaining them now, and all the rituals that go along with it, and all the things that are inside them, they kind of become their own god in themselves. But we need to build those memorials, and we need to guard against making the memorial itself become our god. Part of the role of these memorials too is that they provide a great opportunity for us to remember and to teach our children, to teach the younger ones who are coming through. In verse 6, it is the children who will ask, what do these stones mean? And it will be the responsibility of their parents to explain and to describe what happened and to explain what it's all about. Not just to pass down the historical event, but to encourage the worship and praise of God for what he has done. The word sign used in verse 6, It's a very active word. It can also mean the word pledge. This memorial is an active sign that God can be trusted, that his word is true, his promises are always fulfilled, and that these children would do well to pledge themselves to his purposes and his cause. Finally, this memorial is to remind Israel that God has a much bigger view of things than just them. in Joshua 4 verses 19 to 24, we'll get a better glimpse of that. On the fourth day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. He said, "In the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them, 'Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground, for the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you and until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan just what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord.'" Once again, the purpose of the memorial is described by Joshua, but the passage does explain how this event is not just for the benefit of this small nation of people at this particular point in time. While it is a part of that, it's not all about that. It also has in mind people who, much later in time, under different circumstances, in different places, will need to be reminded of God's great power. This is a reminder of God's continued work of redemption, but the scope is much broader. It's not just focused on the little nation of Israel. We're looking here at God's purpose in saving all his creation, all humankind. "He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, so that you might always fear, respect, honour, revere, worship, praise, adore, love the Lord your God." We started off thinking about that hymn that we sang, "Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah." At the end of that verse, songs of praises, songs of praises I will ever give to thee. And that's the purpose in doing this, in remembering this, in looking at this, that all people will remember God and give him their praise, their worship in their life every day. Let's pray.